I'm Scott Catoon, and it's time to start talking about tomorrow's business today. Welcome to the show, guys. Harley, welcome to the show. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is one of those things where, you know, I see the Red Cross buckets. I see all the Red Cross things around, and I think of MASH. I don't know why. I can't tell you why that is, but I just do. I know that there is a connection, I should say. But Harley, why don't you get us started and start giving us a little bit of history on what the American Red Cross is for, I don't know how there's any person on earth that doesn't know what it is, but just in case there are.
Well, it's a great point. There is a connection, right? So, you know, militaries around the world use the Red Cross to symbolize one thing, and that's help. And, yep. And that's exactly what the Red Cross symbol means. Whether you're in Chicago, or anywhere through the United States or in the world, we're an organization, I'm 130 years old. We focus on helping people on the worst day of their lives. And every day here in Chicago, Red Cross volunteers find themselves in the street corner watching somebody's house burn down and helping them pick up the pieces over the next few hours. And that's what the Red Cross means to people. It means help, and it means being there for people on the worst day of their lives.
Well, thank you for making me feel vindicated that I think of MASH. I honestly don't know why. I do.
You got it.
But now I feel okay about it.
Good.
I have to say, though, with regard to Red Cross, you know, that's one of those things where it's got to be an incredibly giving job in that you can help people. And afterward, you know that you've done a lot to, you know, really make what is their, like you said, their worst day of their life not so terrible. At the same time, in a lot of ways, it's like a social worker where every single day is also the most stressful day of your life because you are handling people whose lives are just coming apart.
And you know it'll be like that tomorrow as well.
Yeah. And you're the disaster officer, right? So this is like your day. This is your life.
Absolutely. So I get the pleasure of working with a small staff and a large group of volunteers who spend every single day waking up to do that exact same thing they did yesterday, and that's to help people.
How many volunteers roughly are in Chicago area?
In Chicago, we have almost 2,000 volunteers who are affiliated with the Red Cross in some way, shape, or form, are trained, and are officers. Oftentimes rolling out of bed in the middle of the night to do the kind of work that needs to be done.
That's fantastic. So disaster strikes, and I want to ask you, what are steps 1, 2, and 3?
90% of the time, it's a house fire.
Okay.
So for us, it's making sure that people know that you only have 2 minutes to get out of your house if there's a fire. So for us, it's the things you do ahead of time. It's making sure you have working smoke alarms. And it's making sure that you, your children, maybe the elderly family that lives with you, knows exactly how to get out of that house in less than 2 minutes, because oftentimes that's what you have. And then after that, it's about making sure that everybody's okay, and then making sure you know what to do following that.
Now, how about from an American Red Cross standpoint, from a reactionary standpoint, what are the protocols? You've been told that there's a house fire, or maybe it's even bigger. It's was it Joplin, Missouri, when you've got a mm-hmm. massive tornado goes through. What are the protocols in place for you guys? What are your first and second and third, I guess, steps?
So our first step is we are monitoring the disaster situation anywhere in the United States 24 hours a day. If we do see something happen, we have volunteers sometimes that are at one of our offices, but they may be on their couch using some of the technology tools that we have to be able to watch those disasters, and they're dispatching their fellow volunteers. So we're making sure that we're getting people there. In Chicago, that's in about 75 minutes. Wow. This isn't next business day. It's about having technology that allows volunteers to be there when people need us, not when it's convenient for business hours. After that, we're working with our emergency management partners to make sure we're doing exactly what needs to be done. In a house fire, we're helping get that family a roof over their head over the next 24, 48 hours. When it's a tornado, maybe in a rural area, it's opening a shelter that we already have pre-established to meet the influx of families, and then meeting their needs like food, shelter, clothing, medication, as well as mental health issues.
Well, I think that's a good time to bring Dan into the conversation here, Dan Ratner with Public Good Software. Why don't you kind of give us a little update on what Public Good is, and I'm going to start to bind this conversation and open it up as to that's an important part of what he just mentioned in steps 1 and 2 for sure is the network of people and making sure that the people can be connected and brought to the right place to deploy relief.
For sure. Public Good is about helping people find, connect with, and support organizations working on the causes they care about at the moment that they feel motivated to make a difference in the world. And it's so important for folks to be able to do that at those moments and not just move on. You know, as Harley has said, preparedness is a big deal. Having support that's ongoing is a big deal. And folks have heard of Red Cross, which is great, and they do wonderful work. But there are also a lot of causes in which you may not have heard of the organizations that are doing amazing work in your community, some of which have been around for decades or even centuries, but just don't have as high a profile.
Yeah.
And issues ranging from violence prevention, certainly a big one here in Chicago, to pet welfare, to basic health needs, to education. But finding organizations that are working on those causes in a way that's meaningful to you.
And how does Public Good do that? What is your what's the background on that? How did Public Good come to?
Public Good is really the nexus of a few things that all came together at once, and one of them is our partners' experience. I was at Sitter City, which is still the nation's largest dedicated service for connecting parents with childcare online.
Former guest on our show, Genevieve. Mm-hmm.
Yep, big online marketplace. My partner Jason was a founding employee at Orbitz and The Point, which ultimately became Groupon. Yep. So big marketplace guys. And we got the opportunity to work together at the president's reelection campaign in 2012 and really learned about grassroots organizing and why people care and how they care about causes and how technology can really enable those kinds of changes. So we took those things, put them together, and now we work with everybody who we really feel has a stake in making things better. So the nonprofit organizations that are doing amazing work like the Red Cross, and also people that have folks that really want to make that difference, whether that is corporations, whether that's media, whether that's foundations, and just folks on the street who just want to make the world a little bit better and want to have some good alternatives for how to do it.
It's one of the best times I think ever in our history for this. I mean, obviously there's, you know, World War II, everyone, you know, lend a hand, so to speak. But I see and work with numerous companies, especially at 1871, but also when I was at TechNexus and companies that I know of who are not in Chicagoland area that are working very, very hard to do whatever they can, even if it's a byproduct of their actual mainstay of their business, to give back and make sure that they provide shelter, food, clothing, supplies, any kind of relief, financial, crowdfunding. Desiree Vargas Wrigley was here with formerly of Give Forward, I guess.
Yep.
There's a lot of action going on, particularly in Chicago, actually, in this space. I would look over to you, Dan, and ask you, why do you think that is? Why do you think this has been such a hot button thing where we're seeing these companies pop up like crazy? Is it the technology or is it the good heartedness, the millennial heart? Or, you know, what is it? What is it that
I think
that's
it's a
it
few
happen?
Things. I mean, I do think that you're right that Chicago is an absolute center for this. And we always have been a center of philanthropy and kind of do-goodness of one kind or another. That's part of our history. It's part of our legacy. And I think it's something we should be really, really proud of. I think technology has reached a certain point where we're starting to see those spread out with the early successes, especially around crowdfunding. But I personally think crowdfunding isn't enough. I mean, that's still just a moment when you can make a transaction.
Sure.
It's ultimately kind of an extension of a social media experience.
Yep.
And it's good, but it doesn't provide long-term engagement. It doesn't provide long-term support. And it doesn't allow the organizations to be able to plan and be able to function on an ongoing basis. And I think it also doesn't provide fulfillment for the people that are doing it. What we're really seeing is, especially the millennial generation, but people in general are having this idea that there's not such a thing as work-life balance. There's a thing called work-life fusion.
Yeah.
Because you're working all the time, you're living all the time, and you want your work to be meaningful in some way. Especially, I think, in the world where wages are relatively static, you aren't feeling like you're going to get your entire reward from a compensation standpoint. So it's really important to be part of that change. It's one of the things that makes me really optimistic.
Yeah.
I mean, I look around the city and I look around the country and I look around the world and I see a lot that's wrong. But I also see a much stronger tide of people that really want to make it better than I feel like I've ever seen before.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'll switch back over to you, Harley, here. I mean, as mentioned before, I see a lot of companies who do this, Public Good Software, and Dan is obviously an example of that. but a lot of times on my shows, I do these industry innovator segments, and I have large organizations, large companies come on the show. And one of the things that they talk about is, with the standpoint of, as mentioned before, that there's all these different technologies and things that are popping up, is the lack of agility for a large organization. The way that American Red Cross is set up, from what I understand, I'm sure you're going to obviously shed light better than I can do this, but they are set up better than a lot of large organizations in that they're sort of like a platoon mentality. You've got them set up all over different areas. I assume, obviously, financially that's part of it, but the ability to deploy to relief areas quickly is also another part of it. Can you kind of show me or tell us a little bit about how organizations like American Red Cross how they look for and work with companies such as Public Good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're dead on. You hit the beauty of what the Red Cross has always been as a movement. It's always been one that is community driven and it really grows out of the compassion and the skills and the desires of any given community across the country. So when you think about responding to a local disaster, it's the people of that community responding to the disaster. So when we talk about Red Cross volunteers, this is not a special group that lives somewhere or lives in this section of the town or not. It is of the town. It is of the people who live here. And so for us, this opportunity to engage people who have this compassion about their community is central for us. And so our question is, how do we create partnerships with organizations like this and tools that allow us to do that in real time? That's a big deal for us. And so it's kind of taken the best of what we've known about the Red Cross being grassroots and yep. local and tapping into exactly those things that make that are strengths in those towns, Chicago in particular. How do we create brand new volunteer opportunities that isn't necessarily, let's say, MASH or the traditional areas where we've been strong in nurses or in volunteers to do disaster relief? How do we carve out opportunities for people who, in their free time, they do software development? Yep. How do we help them create open source tools that our volunteers can use to help their community better? So it's really kind of doubling down on the things that made the Red Cross and our communities great in the first place.
Now, obviously, it's an organization, nonprofit. That is, or is it profit?
No, not nonprofit.
Yeah, I was going to say, to my understanding, it was a nonprofit.
No, absolutely, you're absolutely right. Yeah,
so financial parts of this become kind of a challenge. And I wonder, how does an organization like Red Cross stay up to beat with technology? Do you do it in-house, or do you try to find companies and acquire them or work with them? Because obviously, you know, startup companies, everything they do, I think, is charity at this, you know, at the early stage. At least that's how I feel about it. In the early stage, before you've gotten any funding, while I would love to give you more time and more of my resources, I can't even, you know, pay for my own house. So
exactly.
How do you develop, you know, it's obviously a big part of this is technology, mm-hmm. especially in the future.
I'll answer the first part of your question. On the nonprofit sector, there's not anybody on the nonprofit sector that does keep up with technology. You know, we see in our corporate partners and in our partners in the tech sector, a tremendous amount of things being developed and coming out. And you're right. We just do not have the infrastructure and the financials to be able to invest in those kinds of things. But this kind of tech innovation, this environment that we live in, has created a lot of opportunities for us to identify very low-cost examples, very open-source platforms that cost little to nothing. In the grand scheme of things, for an organization as large as ours, it gives us the ability to take that tool at a very low cost, implement it here in a place like Chicago, take that tool and the development work that we need to do down to a hackathon at 1871, yep. Tell people about our mission, let them help us in the bits and pieces that they can, and tomorrow we've got a better tool than we had yesterday. And it's not 100%, and it's not going to be where we want to be, but it creates an environment in which every day we have the opportunity to change something, knowing that we can't buy that newest and latest system that's going to come out tomorrow. That's just never going to be the place we're in.
It's an unfortunate kind of vicious cycle, and I'm going to go on a line here, Dan. You're a serial entrepreneur. I mean, you've had some numerous successful ventures. I don't normally try to put like a blanket opinion, which I don't even know if this is fact-based, out there in front of two people who are experts in their field to crush me, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway, like a fool. But in all seriousness, I feel like a lot of the technology that's being developed now, in particular, like you guys are working on, has the ability to reduce the cost and the overhead to deliver networks of people, to deploy resources, to get, you know, to raise money. There's so many different tools that it actually lowers the operating cost of organizations that are large, such as Red Cross, to a point where would it not, this is the opinion part, would it not behoove, even though it's tight, you're on a tight budget, behoove organizations like Red Cross and others to invest early in companies like yourselves so that they can, long-term, they would reduce their own costs, essentially.
Yeah, I think there are two huge points that you bring up there. And yeah. I think one of them is not just about cost reduction.
Yeah,
it's about cost reduction to the point that it actually enables you to do things that were simply infeasible before. And I think that's a big part of what we think about is how do you get to a grassroots organizing base? Mm-hmm. And this is not something that most nonprofits can do. They don't have the marketing departments, they don't have the marketing budget, and they don't necessarily have, you know, really the skills around supporter engagement. That's not the mission mission of the organization. Sure. So if we can provide that, and we can provide that with the tech team they always wish they were able to afford, and we're able to really spread out those costs and be able to do that in a way that is tied to their success, we feel like that is a real game changer in terms of our ability to engage and our ability to make it better. But it's why we formed as a social enterprise. I have a lot of, I don't know if sympathy is the word I'm looking for, but you know, the organizations that we work with are so often judged on metrics that don't necessarily align to how they can do long-term capacity. So they're told things like investing in technology, well, that's overhead, that's not program, yep, that's not correct, something we should be paying for. And it makes it almost impossible for them to make these kinds of investments. That's why I can count on one hand the number of nonprofits that have successfully developed large-scale technology products.
And the sad thing to your point, the sad thing about that is it doesn't end with nonprofit organizations. I get the same exact conversation from companies that quote unquote have venture funds that they've they've invested in for not R&D, but to acquire tech startups. And at the end of the day, they go, well, you know, they kind of back themselves out the door. And next thing you know, that money that's remaining goes into the marketing budget. And you're like, you're not going to grow ever. And it's a sad, sad state of affairs, as people say.
A little bit of innovation is a good thing in any field.
Sure.
I think just saying, hey, we've done this once and now we're just going to scale it infinitely, that's really tough. So I think that being at the cutting edge of research is a big deal. It's one of the things I really admire about American Red Cross, you know, seeing their preparedness and operation center, seeing some of the hackathon work that they've done. You know, we got to know each other a couple of years ago when Public Good was really first getting launched. And you know, I think the challenges that Red Cross is dealing with are a little different than some of the organizations we're dealing with because, as you said at the beginning, everybody knows who they are.
Yep.
But they don't necessarily know about everything they do.
Yep.
I think most folks, when they hear American Red Cross, don't immediately think they're out fighting every – or not fighting, but providing support around every fire in the greater Chicago or northern Illinois area. You don't necessarily think about another organization like the Museum of Science and Industry. We've all heard about it. You don't think about them as STEM educators.
This is true.
But you know, part of our goal is to be able to help expand that and help really get that reach out there and, again, just help them appeal to more people in a way that they really weren't able to before.
And that's obviously the whole reason that I have – I try to have a cause-based segment of every one of our weekly you know, shows. And it was no coincidence that I worked very hard to get both of you guys here. I mean, we fought for about a month to try to get this here. So we could have this exact conversation, because I think, honestly, you two are both the exact person who are dealing with one end versus the other end. And I look at you, Harley, and I say, like, what could you imagine if you guys had the funds available or the whatever the decision makers that be would take a decision and invest in tech companies early on before, you know, be their first, basically their first investor and bring them on so that you guys can make it part of your sort of your culture, the way that things go in the future?
I will say I'll give you a tentative yes to that. But also, let me give two caveats to that.
Sure.
So number one, yes, I that would be an amazing world if we could do that. But one of the things that I am often blown away with just at the sheer volume that the tech community creates every single day, right? The new program that's going to do the thing that it didn't do yesterday and so on and so forth. And so any ability to keep up with that, I can't imagine what that would look like one day. But at the end of the day, what's most important for us is the mission that we do, right? So everything else could go away, but we have to be there for that family in the middle of the night. We have to be there to provide that blood if there's a car accident tomorrow. These are all things we have to do, right? So it scares me a little bit to think, could we keep up with that? I'm not sure that we could, right? Because we've got to focus on that mission. But the second piece is, I'm not sure it's necessarily the products or these kind of tangible outputs. We've done more to just learn from the kind of innovation, the kind of positivity, and the kind of openness to collaboration from our friends in the tech community, like Public Good and everybody else, whether we're at 1871. It's flipped the way our mind thinks about the work that we do, and that's what's been most beneficial to us. So the fact that I've got teams of people who are thinking innovatively, even if it's 10% of what the rest of the tech world is doing, to infect a little bit of that into us has made every single day even better for our clients and for our mission. So at the end of the day, that's what the investment has meant for us, I would say.
Well, I'll take the summary of both of your conversations here and put my opinion down into the dirt here real quick. not to like slap myself in the face, but I'm going to anyway. One other thing that I noticed just listening to both of your points on this is also there is the threat that the technology and the different, the innovation, as you put it, that you guys are developing and many others like you are developing might not reach the potential that it could have if it got sharked up early by a large entity that, like you said, I'm not sure we ever will be that fast or will be able to stay up with the tech like that. Inherently, if you invest in a company, you're going to sway it in the direction that your organization goes, and therefore you might not develop the next big thing that could be world-changing.
We've certainly seen that happen with companies in the past. And
sure
to your
have.
Previous point, I think one of the things that I'm seeing change that excites me is that other organizations that are better equipped to act like investors are doing that, in particular large foundations.
That's a good
point. So seeing recent announcements from MacArthur and the Chicago Community Trust, for example, Knight Foundation has been a supporter of ours, and they do a lot of this kind of work. They have officers that are set up to be able to recognize the kind of impact organizations like us have. I think as they start really opening their purse strings a little bit and seeing us as a strategic investment for their long-term growth, and also as a strategic investment in terms of program and the ability of their organizations to execute, I think that will be a source of funding that will really allow us to remain on mission without having quite as much of a threat from the traditional cycle that we've seen of a lot of investors who are looking to just turn an investment over, sell it to whoever wants to buy it, and move on.
Very good points. Very good points. How do people learn how to get involved more with Public Good and companies be able to learn more about it? Where do we go to find it?
Come to publicgood.com.
It's just that simple.
It's that easy.
Very cool. And I think everyone knows the Red Cross. You just go to the MASH unit, right?
You go to the MASH unit.
According to me.
Redcross.org. Every single day of the year, people can give of their time, give of their funds to help their communities, themselves in donating blood. And Redcross.org, 24 hours a day, always.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dan, Harley, and our amazing sponsors from Insperity for making this conversation possible. You can watch this episode and more on Advisor TV, stream us on the WGN Plus app, or download each episode on iTunes. And remember, stay connected and follow us on Twitter at TBT on WGN. Boom, that's a wrap. And now, your Coachable Moments brought to you by the Happy Hour Coach, Tim Ressmeyer, the official coach of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN+.
No one in the nonprofit sector keeps up with technology. Wow, that's a pretty powerful statement. And having spent time in the not-for-profit sector myself, I know that's the case. It's really hard to have the latest and the greatest when your revenue comes in from donations and contributions. What we heard today from Harley and from Dan from the American Red Cross and Public Good is how we're looking at that whole model differently. And in fact, the Red Cross is getting some amazing technology by entrepreneurs, by coders, by people at 1871 who are willing to use their skills to the betterment of society. People who are willing to be creative and aggressive in creating new things that will help those not-for-profits. And what Public Good does is allows those people to connect. They've got a skill, they've got a gift, and how can they find an outlet to use that to make a difference? People want to give. People want to make a difference. People want to care. And sometimes that's really hard to do. So here we have an example of that channel that allows people to apply what they have for that greater good. But then you're also making an organization like the Red Cross do things even better and be more effective as they carry out their mission. In the green room, Harley said that the Chicago chapter of the Red Cross is being seen as a trendsetter and carving the way for how technology can help them do what they do even better. So kudos to the Red Cross and to publicgood.com and for everyone who's out there willing to make a difference. This is Tim Ressmeyer, the Happy Hour Coach, with your Coachable Moment.